production and the Nando's adverts and all the things that are introduced in the presentation. But the main purpose of today's presentation is to promote dialogue. And I'm sure even in the advert, we did mention that the main purpose of today's presentation is we want to hear what people in this room think of polygamy. And
okay, well, are you responding to the issue?
Partly, yes.
But as a follow-up on that, since like this is an open discussion, but again, the work shows that even in situations where there is no polygamous relationship formally, like in the context that we're discussing, also the situations whereby, you know, if the other partner is away, the other one does whatever she or he wants to do, still exist even if it's not a polygamous relationship. Like, for example, that's why we've got cases in couples where we've got discordant HIV status, for example. So I think either way, whether it's a polygamous relationship or not a polygamous relationship, that does still happen.
Jerry, you had a question too?
Yeah, I have a question about some point of clarification. Because my understanding is that the study wanted to establish what cultural practices exist in Botswana, and not necessarily towards conclusively saying that, as an example, polygamy, whether it can positively reduce or influence HIV. I didn't get that, the link between the establishment of the cultural practices in Botswana and how you drew the link of that and the HIV in terms of whether there was any information to that effect. It's just a point of clarification, unless I'm getting that wrong.
I think what she's trying to do is to distinguish the element of the study and the topic we are discussing of polygamy in relation to HIV. Because maybe the study, the objectives of the study, initial one was not to link the polygamy to HIV, but it has come up as a topic for discussion. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what am I right?
So you want to know why the topic has come up?
The link in between and the supporting evidence of that link between the polygamy and the HIV, I seem to be losing something.
The link,
maybe I came in late.
Is responding all right?
Yes. I'm referring to a slide.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. These are just extracts of examples of some of the extracts from the results. For example, this respondent participant mentioned that culture protected people from the spread of HIV and AIDS. And here they're talking about, in the past, a woman will know which other women was her husband involved with. And here we're talking about polygamous relationship. The person was talking about polygamous relationship. I might not have put everything on the slide, but the participant was supporting why she thought polygamy would not predispose people to HIV and AIDS. And the reason was, you will know which other women your husband will be involved with. And then the other one here, the woman in polygamous relationship, whether married or not, as Kangelani has mentioned, that even if you're not married, people do have multiple partner relationships. the person will know that she can only have sexual relationship with her partner in a polygamous relationship. And they thought it was safe for them. And also these days, men unofficially go around with other women who no one knows who they go around with. And in a polygamous relationship, you will know that your husband is going to sleep in that small hut or in the other room with the woman that you know. Unlike in other multiple relationships when you don't know where he's gone to, who he is involved with.
I should clarify. Prof, you had a comment on the issue?
No, we heard, thank you. Someone has got a comment or question from Captain Yoriswa.
I mean, for those people who seem to be pro-polygamous, there is a general, it was said that it involves discipline, polygamy prevents unfaithfulness. But my concern is that it is the assumption that when a new entrant into the relationship arrives, he or she is negative. Because there is no way that it mentions that if a new, mostly a woman, enters this polygamous relationship, she gets tested. So nobody knows if she is already bringing the HIV into the safety net, so to speak. So this is just a general concern, particularly for those people who are pro-polygamy. Yeah. That was my comment.
Any reaction on to that? I think there is a good point you have raised that if you have to advocate the issue of polygamy, then it means you have to know your status if you are within the polygamy, and then if you any newcomers then have to undergo the criteria of knowing what status they are in. And that's a point. An issue to be discussed as a topic.
Yeah, but Rendani's point, if we just go back to that, for me, it actually makes little difference whether you are in a formal polygamous relationship or an informal one. There are no guarantees just because you are in a formal polygamous relationship you stick within. This thing about discipline regarding sexuality. And I think Rendani clearly pointed out that in fact, not only the men, but even women, folk in such a relationship, are known to graze around. So I suppose the same issues that apply to the informal multiple sexual partnership would also apply to the polygamous relationship to a large extent. I suppose that's a truism, really. Maybe there's no debate about that. It's true, that's life. Maybe to keep the discussion going, the issue is, as far as I'm aware, there has been no evidence either way to show the impact of polygamy on HIV. Unless if somebody has done a study to actually conclusively prove that, you know, being in a polygamous relationship actually reduces HIV infection. Do you want to comment about that, Siri?
Yes, no studies have been conducted to prove that polygamous relationships reduce the HIV HIV infection. My point is that if, for example, if we still have people, prominent people, like a state president, high-profile people who believe in polygamous relationships, and we know that polygamous relationships are no different to multi-partner relationships. What do we do as advocates of HIV prevention? I think we have a role to play to make people who believe, who believe and think that polygamous relationships can help in the spread, in preventing the spread of HIV and AIDS, make them aware of the issues that we have already mentioned, that it doesn't mean that if we think that it's the men only who can go around, but we also know that women can go around. It's also our duty to maybe promote condom use in polygamous relationships. If they are mentioned, as I said, and that there are polygamous marriages in existence, there are people who still believe in them, I think we have a role to play in what do we do then. Do we say to people, don't get married? You know, do you say to the president, we can't have polygamous relationships, we can't have this as something that we government also supports, that is legal? Are we going to say to them, you need to stop that? Or are we going to look into people practicing that and making sure that whilst they are in those relationships, they are aware of what can happen, what can contribute to the spread of HIV and AIDS? It's same as in with circumcision. We're not saying people should not be circumcised. We are promoting that maybe at the circumcision schools, people, the traditional leaders should use sterile instruments to circumcise the men in the bush. So I'm just giving that as an example. So I think, personally, if it's in existence and we know that it is practiced, it's coming up these days. And as Africans, we also talk a lot about re-looking at our heritage, what has happened in the past, wanting to practice things that we believe that the apartheid system denied us opportunity to do them. So I think we do have a role to play as people who are involved in HIV prevention.
Prof, if I follow up the comment you have made, are you saying there are no studies that have been conducted on the issue of polygamy in relation to HIV AIDS, or they have been conducted and there has been no link that has been established? And if none of the two, why is there no interest, noting that in Africa polygamy is an issue?
Well, I hope there is somebody else who knows otherwise, but I have been writing about cultural practices myself. And it doesn't only apply to polygamy, but to other cultural practices. I can think of some popular ones like widow inheritance, widow cleansing, even traditional healing practices, traditional male circumcision. there's just no evidence that actually this increases the risk of HIV per se. And perhaps that's part of the challenge in how you actually then address some of these practices. It's understandable that, for example, with traditional male circumcision, part of the difficulty has been in the past where it's claimed that male circumcisers were using the same razor blade on several people. And the practice in that instance has been to actually suggest the use of a new razor blade on each person being circumcised. Yes, that's improving the conditions under which circumcision is being done. But in terms of direct evidence, at least if it's there, it's little. But yet there is such a move. I'm privileged to belong to an interdisciplinary working group with UNESCO, which focuses on culture and HIV and AIDS. We talk about these issues mainly broadly, but we really don't have tangible evidence, which is why when it comes to interventions, there are really very few that address cultural issues directly, because we have never proved one way or the other what the link is with HIV infection.
Thank
wow,
you.
That silence there.
I just want to refer you to a slide here, maybe. It will break the silence. If we look at this a slide, even if it's like old literature, but I found them interesting with regard to polygamy. Like the third bullet, polygamy is particularly valuable in modern times when African men are often forced to seek work in the cities and towns. If a husband has several wives, he can afford to take one at a time to live with him in the town, while the other wife or wives remain behind to care for the children and family. As a result, polygamy often provides a healthy alternative for a solution to problems inherent in certain cultural customs. I'm just referring to this slide because I'm thinking if there are authors who kind of can give more information or support that polygamy does exist and it still has a role, even if, according to these authors, there's no direct link in the role polygamy plays in preventing HIV or in predisposing people to HIV infection. The authors are saying polygamy does exist, and we need not frown, you know, upon polygamy when we hear people talking about it, when people are engaged in it. It is there. People are practicing it, and if it's been practiced, what do we do about it? Are we going to say because there's no evidence right now, and you know, there's no proof that there's a direct link, but I'm sure from what we've also said in this room that women can also go outside and look for other men, and I've also heard that when people engage in polygamous marriages, they don't come with, you know, a clean note to say I'm HIV negative or let's go and test. So with that, we can't say, yes, it protects, because we know there are weaknesses in the structure, and what we need to do something about what can predispose people to HIV infection. And we know in South Africa we had in the news that our president is in a polygamous relationship that Dr. Rendani just mentioned, and had a baby out of his polygamous structures, and we don't know whether the other partner who he's got a baby with is HIV free or, I mean, negative or positive. So those are the issues that we need to look at as advocates in HIV prevention, and not ignore that polygamy does exist and is part of some of Africans.
You had a point here.
Yes. I think in addition to the problem of polygamy, we must also look at some of the socialization discourses in our society. For example, in one of the slides you talked about the belief that a bull has to belong to a number of pastures or something like that. I think those are some of the discourses, some of the very patriarchal discourses that will predispose a lot of young men or boys who in future to go into polygamous relationships, even if it's extra polygamous relationships. And those are some of the things that I think we need to focus attention on. And also on the issue, on that third bullet point about the Mbiti quoted by Van Dyck,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that Mbiti's ideas are from 1969. Mm-hmm. Now, society has evolved quite dramatically since 1969. So you'll find that there are certain sociocultural practices today that impact on people's sexual behavior, such that even when people are, whether people are in a polygamous or a monogamous relationship, there are certain sociocultural issues that we have to focus on as part of our AIDS education, as a part of our attempts to change people's behavior. And I don't think we should look differently at people in a polygamous or in a monogamous relationship, because men, as with the example you gave of the president having a child out of late wedlock.
Mm.
Now, those are some of the things that show us that there are certain practices that impact on sexual behavior, and we must identify the sociocultural factors that influence those behaviors and see if we can change them in any way.
Okay. And just to add on, I was talking to a colleague this morning about the same issue about a man is a bull confined, and my colleague was saying, you know, in this time, during these times, you will not find this being practiced. And my argument was, I know that, as you say, socialization, when people get married, I mean, there are still songs that even in urban areas people still sing when someone gets married, to promote this, a man is not a bull, you know, you must expect this in a marriage relationship. And if couples have problems and the wife goes to elders in the family, discuss this, that the husband maybe has extramarital relationship, they will still mention things like that, because they think keeping you in the marriage is like, you know, you have to accept that these things do happen, even if they will talk to their husband, their partner aside, to say stop this, don't do that. But those things are still being done even today, that you will be told that, you know, oh, remember, you know, a man is like, men are like that, and all those kind of things. So I do agree with you that we also look at socio-cultural factors, socialization, what we do every day in life that we can overlook as part of issues that can predispose people in HIV transmission.
Are you okay? Thank you. I just think that while we are discussing the areas of revisiting cultural norms and practices post-apartheid, there is also an evolution of women's equality and their rights to restorative justice. And the huge influence that patriarchy and the components of male dominance in those cultural norms and practices has also evolved. So there must certainly be something that we assert and start. I'd like to offer for this particular discussion today that the equality of women and their rights to equity in modern society, moves beyond the resurrection of just a single set of rules that came out of, or that was put as cultural practice and our rights to practice our culture. Because there are other things as well that in South Africa has an influence. For instance, the Muslim Mixed Marriages Act and those fly in the face of it. Some practices are there that is absolutely against what we would say a majority population cultural norms and practices. So I don't think it is just to move away from the influence of acceptable polygamous practices from the past versus the work that we are trying to do, which is really yeoman work to help prevent the spread of HIV. So we need to ask ourselves the serious questions. Shouldn't a different set of rules then, while we embrace the right to practice our cultural norms from the past, another set of rules should be introduced. The right of someone to know their status, the right of a woman or any other person to know their status, even if there is polygamous practices going, because their social network affects them directly, and they have the right to know.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My apologies for arriving late. My name is Monavis Karchok from the South African Medical Association. Please forgive me if some of the points I'm going to be commenting on have been covered during the time I was absent to my late arrival, unless I have apologized earlier on. There's just about three points that I would like to discuss relating to the culture, but more importantly, I want to come from the angle of norms, values, in the context of culture, and what we believe this is relevant to the topic. I'm not going to talk much about the polygamy itself. I think the speakers before me have expressed some of the points I would have raised. More importantly is the issue of the new entrance into the polygamous relationships as compared to the outcomes out of the activities that are taking place post the polygamous relationship, in which case, in which event HIV and AIDS measuring is one of them. I think it's an important point that the new people who are entering into a new polygamous relationship, their status and how all of those things. Actually, that has been made that point very clear in my view. The second one that I just want to talk about and dwell on it is circumcision. I think the recent studies that have been released on circumcision have now are coming into the open and with a glimpse of hope that there is a light at the end of the tunnel regarding this. I'm talking about the Orange Farm studies and was being taken up in the middle and in the central and eastern Africa. The point I want to make there is I think quality control in circumcision is really should not be overlooked. In some communities, just a small nick, small cut during the circumcision is taken as if it is a complete circumcision. Meanwhile, it is only a nick. That's what it is. Whereas if it was in a controlled environment by experienced traditional surgeon or even what we would call trained Western type of surgeons, it's really an issue that we should consider. We shouldn't consider it as having been a complete circumcision if it was just a nick. And the events and the results of such a procedure that would, is incomplete. Now, that's the point that I think is important. When we talk and we promote circumcision, we must deal with that holistically in terms of the quality of that surgical procedure. The third part I wanted to talk again, which I think is relevant to culture, is it would lead to social cultural practices. Certain communities, even to this day, and more so in the past, dealt with ukuhlola intombi, which means examining young girls, during the time just before they enter into puberty, and after that, to examine that may not have been the intention at the beginning, but to examine whether they are sexually active and counsel them and talk to them by traditional women. That would, in a culturally, in a way, would contribute, even though I'm not aware of studies that were done in that regard, that would contribute to the behavior, sexual behavior of the young girls that would have been examined at that time, and therefore that would modify their behavior moving forward. Again, it is only a hope that, in fact, if you follow up on them at a later stage, whether that has had a positive impact or not. The second last part is we talk about culture. To me, and many other people that I've sort of interacted with would argue and say, it looks like there is a discord between cultural practice, cultural teachings at certain stages of one's personal development. What is the culture? What is this culture taught a person pre-puberty, after teenage, when they are older? Is there any guarantee that the cultural teachings at an early stage would be followed at a later stage in life by an individual? The argument that I would advance in that regard is children exposed to cultural teachings, good as they may be, might not necessarily follow those cultural teachings when they leave the rural life, when they leave the home environment, when they get involved in corporate institutions, when they get to the urban areas, and so on and so on and so on. So the cultural practices need to be looked at in terms of their consistency in application from the time that cultural training or cultural teaching took place at the beginning and right at the end. Does the 60-year-old still practice the cultural teachings that were impacted on him when he or she was still young? I want to argue and say there's a shift that takes place over a period of time. I did touch on, of course, linked to that kind of concept, you've got post-rural, post-urban exposure, post kind of one, what kind of work is one doing, people living in the country and working in other countries and get exposed to other cultures. I think it's an assumption to say you leave your setting where you grew up or the setting where you were exposed to all sorts of things. The assumption is that when you actually leave and go to other countries and other cultures, you're still practicing the same kind of practices. I think that is an assumption, and probably we would have to look into that. Male gender, patriarchal societies, and culture, I think it is an issue. The point has been made by the previous speaker that the issue of patriarchal societies, and the reverse might be true for some societies. We call it polygamy, polyandry, if I'm not mistaken, the one that is an opposite of polygamy. So this gender, male, female dominance issue, in the context of culture, in my view, it has got an impact. And after this discussion, I'll probably come in just to deal with what one considers to be the impact thereof, or what are the results of studies that have been done in that regard. Lastly, Chairperson, the talking about 1969 and BT and Van Weg studies and so on, I think the point is made that back then, in the day, and right now, certain things have changed, and they would allude to some of the points that I mentioned earlier on. But more importantly to me, as I conclude on this, is that the issue of legal and constitutionality awareness is an issue now, because it talks to people doing things, claiming it's their right to do so, and deriving such claims from the Constitution or from the rule of law and entitlements that would then be flowing in from that. There are many examples that one can cite that would say that it doesn't matter what you say and what you do, this is the kind of my cultural practice that I want to practice, because I derive the right to do so from the rule of law or from the Constitution. Thanks.
Thank you a lot for quite interesting points you have raised. And I think they are broad and they are very valuable if they are followed. I hope you have taken note of them, and they are worth investigating, because as people shift from rural to urban, do they carry on with what the cultural taught them? Maybe there is a lot of breakdown that have been taking place, and should show that the problem we are facing right now. Quick comment, because we are running short of
yes.
time.
Just maybe in conclusion, and taking note of comments made, what I find very interesting about cultural practices, and I'm not talking in particularly about polygamy. Polygamy, yes, today's presentation is focusing on that, is that we get socialized at a very early age about certain things, and we move on. And as you move on, you learn other ways of life. But what I find very interesting about culture is that even when you learn new ways of life, the culture that has been entrenched in the person still unconsciously, you know, play a role in someone's life. And I'll give you an example. A colleague of mine, also talking about cultural practices, mentioned that, you know, culture is like HIV and AIDS. I told you HIV positive, there's a stigma. People are scared to come out and say, I'm HIV positive. And we're moving out, you know, gradually people got to a point where they said, yes, I'm HIV, revealing their status. And culture, because we know that in the past we, you know, assumptions that apartheid era, you know, deprived us to practice certain things and all that. We find that a lot of people are not coming out to the open about what we think they have moved away from. They've been socialized this way, using traditional healers, using, you know, doing certain things, and they move to rural, to urban areas. When they get to urban areas, we assume they don't practice those things. But actually, they do, and may be scared to come out into the open. And we can see recently, just because we had a state president coming out and saying, I'm in a polygamous relationship, I'm married. I mean, thereafter we have so many people coming out and with polygamous relationships. These things do exist in our communities. It's just that people are embarrassed, are scared to be stigmatized and be told that, you know, you are backwards and all that. So what I am saying is that we shouldn't, you know, disregard the fact that even if it's things of the 1969s, 1963s, it becomes part of your being. Whether you westernized or educated, if someone comes to me and says, you know, this cultural practice, I will say, yes, I do know, and I will explain what that is all about. Not necessarily mean that I am practicing it. So all I'm trying to say, we shouldn't disregard that these things do exist. And because of many other circumstances in our lives, maybe we are embarrassed to come out and talk about them openly. So that's just what I wanted to say.
We are running short of time, and I think I will have to bring this to a close. It's a quite interesting topic, and I thank you very much, Sirin, for a provocative topic. And I think it raises issues that need to be forewarned. There are gray areas that need to be researched on. And if we have students among us, should start thinking along those lines. I thank you all for attentive and the contribution that you have brought forward. Thank you all. Yeah.